Good morning, everyone. We're all here at the COC Practice Room 1. This is the Big COC Podcast, Episode 5. I just want to welcome our guest today. We have Wayne Gooding joining us again. Hello, Wayne. How are you?
I'm fine. Delighted to be back.
Good. Wayne's the editor of Opera Canada magazine, and he also volunteers for the COC as a Speakers Bureau member, and that means he gives one of the pre-opera chats, and he's, of course, a seasoned opera traveler. We've mentioned that many times before. I just wanted to mention the new Opera Canada is now out. Is that right?
That's correct. Fall issue.
It looks great. I love the cover. There's Tracy Dahl as the Cheshire Cat.
That's right. Yeah.
In a new Alice in Wonderland opera, which was on at Opera Theatre of St. Louis, I guess, this past summer.
No, it's actually earlier from the spring.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
She looks great. And we have two new panelists today I'd like to welcome. First, Claire Morley, who is the Canadian Opera Company's communications assistant. She's also a soprano with the Elmer Eisler Singers. Hello, Claire.
Hi, good morning.
Good. And Cameron McPhail has joined us. He's a new member of the COC Ensemble. He's a baritone who hails originally from Manitoba, and he was just saying this morning, but it's just, this weather is just not agreeing with you.
I'm not happy at the moment.
We're all kind of sweating it out in this room with the sun beaming, and it's lovely, but it's kind of odd weather. You're currently understudying Falca, is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And they've just started rehearsals for the Xstrata school tour production, and I think Cameron's in the Brothers Grimm.
I am. Right? I'm one of the brothers in the Brothers Grimm.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
one of the title roles.
That's impressive. Well, we can't wait to see that. It's a big year for that that opera. It's the, going to be the 500th performance,
yeah.
I think?
On the 8th of December, it will be the 500th performance of that mm-hmm. show. It is the most performed Canadian piece, or most performed Canadian work.
That's correct.
Yeah.
In history.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah, probably beats out a few of the other ones we could think of.
just narrowly.
And my name's Gianmarco Sagato. I'm the Adult Programs Manager here at the COC. Just a short reminder on how you can listen to our podcasts. Several ways. You can go to COC Radio, which is on our website. You just go to the homepage, click on COC Radio, and you can listen to the podcast directly there. You can also go to iTunes, which is probably the way most people listen to podcasts these days, and subscribe, and then you will be notified whenever there's a new podcast. You can also download the podcast directly from our website. So for our In the News section today, I thought we'd discuss an article which actually appeared in the papers a couple weeks ago, in several British papers especially. The one we're going to look at is from The Guardian. It doesn't really matter. It's more the whole idea that's being brought forth here. The English National Opera has launched a new scheme, kind of calling Undress for Opera. I don't think they mean completely undress. But the idea is to attract maybe a different audience to opera and to offer them reasonably priced tickets, £25 tickets they're offering, and to really encourage people to dress down. They're going to be sort of gussing up the bars with pub beers, I thought, was that kind of thing. And, I mean, this is, you know, something that all opera companies have to kind of struggle with and work with, mm-hmm. trying to find a new audience, and we all do these, we have all these sort of schemes for attracting a younger audience. But I'm just wondering, like, what people think about this particular scheme or these kind of schemes in general.
Well, you mentioned two parts to this. There mm-hmm. was the dress down or undress for opera, and then there was the cheaper tickets, mm-hmm. which actually I think this is English National Opera, and I think it's actually only a certain number of £25 tickets per performance. And they're two separate things, because it strikes me that the single biggest deterrent is not, you know, worrying about what you wear to the opera. The single biggest deterrent is the cost of tickets. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. And younger people have less disposable income, so it's harder for them. So that's the most important thing. The dress down for opera, I think, is specious. I think it's kind of gimmicky. I mean, my own attitude is, if you want to go to the opera in jeans and t-shirt, go to the opera in mm-hmm. jeans and t-shirt. You're there for the music, not mm-hmm. for what you look like. But, you know, people do tend to dress for it. It is usually a special occasion. I mean, it's not something you do every day, and people like to dress up. Mm-hmm. Not in tuxes. I mean, that's, I think, a bad, a sort of a stale image. But people dress. Just one little story. A couple of nights ago, I went back to the COC to see Die Fledermaus, house, and there happened to be two rows in front of me, a whole class of, I think, middle teenagers. And knowing we were going to talk about this, I kind of took a look at them. I mean, I think they were from the same school or the same class even. They're 15 or 16. And it was kind of interesting. There were a couple of boys there in jeans and T-shirts. But when you look really hard at it, you realize that the jeans and T-shirts had been carefully chosen and they were accessorized. Yeah. I mean, this was personal yeah. style. And there were other kids who had dressed up, boys in suits and ties, but it was all of their own, you know, the way they wanted to be, and they were quite comfortable and thoroughly enjoying the performance, yeah. which is really what it was all about.
Yeah. Well, Cameron's nodding his head. I think he has something to add to this.
Well, no, absolutely. I'm thrilled to hear that I wasn't going to be the only one that was going to maybe not take the notion of attracting an audience by relaxing the dress code seriously. The new generation of young people is into artisan cheeses and mustaches and you know, homemade anything, you know, belts from Seattle and Red Wing boots. They're purists. And like, it just doesn't seem as though anybody is going to not come these days because of a various specific
stereotype.
You know, well, just yeah. people, like what you're saying, it's a concerted effort no matter what. Even at Opera Nation, people were in black tie and mm-hmm. people were, you know, someone was in jeans, but it wasn't due to a lack of concern or a lack of
right.
concerted mm-hmm. effort.
Right.
This fellow chose to wear his specific jeans and his specific T-shirt in, you know, with, you know, this was no accident.
Well, it's sort of interesting because there's been a lot of commentary on this whole E&O thing, and what a lot of people seem to be saying is that, you know, if you look at the sort of people behind it, they're dressed in like the highest end designer jeans, and mm-hmm. you know that it's. There's, I mean, jeans these days. I mean, they could be.
It's the bourgeoisie. No, exactly. those fellows in Williamsburg that are sort of walking around as though they don't care spent $600 on that plaid shirt.
Looking like they don't
oh,
care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not fooling anybody.
Yeah.
It seems. I mean, I don't. And I don't know enough. I don't know as much about the business as the rest of you do. I just, you know, I'm just the artist. But it seems to me that people will come to the opera and, you know, be excited to be at the opera, exactly as Wayne was saying. And there was another article written in GQ recently that stated that luxury goods are at an all-time high as far as consumption is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there is disposable income for a younger demographic to a degree. It's simple escapist principles. And they might not go to the south of France, but they may still go to the opera, which I think the trick is just sort of figuring out a way to get young people to come. Mm-hmm. And I don't think dress code is going to make an ounce of difference.
Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. One of the other podcasts I listened to, and I have mentioned here, it's great, Opera Now, if anyone wants a good laugh. These guys are great. But they talked about this story very briefly. But one of the commenters there said, yeah, sort of what we're saying here. Like, I don't really think if young people aren't going to the opera, it's because of the dress code. There's probably other reasons, right? Mm. And one of them might be ticket price. What are some other things? I don't know. I mean, just the art form itself. I mean, feeling
yeah.
intimidated by it, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's just it can be for people who've never gone, especially young people who might not be as accustomed to the live experience like that. I think it's a really overwhelming art form, or it can be, because mm-hmm. it combines almost every art form that exists in one big thing. But yeah, I'm not sure there's really a direct correlation between young kids just not wanting to dress up. I think it's people that come to the opera, it's a very personal, for very personal reasons, I think. A lot of people that have a ton of money will come in their jeans and they just want to be alone and just have a, you know, they want to be comfortable. And I think that's what needs to be stressed a little bit more, is that come in whatever you want, as long as you're comfortable. You don't have to dress up, you don't have to dress down, you just should be able to wear whatever you want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think there's something serious lurking, you know, lurking under this. I mean,
yeah.
it goes to this
yeah.
question of why, what is the issue? No, it's not dress code. I think we're all agreeing on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is ticket to a degree. It's not the only thing, but mm-hmm. I mean, it's just expensive. But the other thing is, young people or people who are unfamiliar with opera may be intimidated by it. But in the case of young people, the problem is they get no exposure to it.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my points.
We're going to get back to the problem of music teaching in the schools.
Education.
Yeah. And so, and I think, again, looking at those young people in front of me at Fledermaus, they had a great time, and they were really engaged with it. There was no, I wasn't watching them all evening, but I wasn't aware of people down there texting or being, unengaged by what they were seeing. And as I was coming out, one young woman shouted to someone a few down, that was so cool. I mean, they really enjoyed the performance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether this was their first opera, but it certainly was something that they enjoyed. I think once people get, once they see how all of the arts are embraced by opera, people come to like it a great deal, and they appreciate also why it's so expensive, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's really what's at issue here, is how do you get people to... How do you open the door to opera to people? Mm-hmm. I mean, so that they'll want to go or want to experience live opera. And that is something that companies can do to a degree, but it's really something that needs to be done within the educational system.
Yeah, definitely.
It seems like they can only do... we're speaking of ways in which, for example, I don't think it's a coincidence that the show that these young folks were seeing and enjoying was our production of Die Fledermaus. A company like Opera Atelier has been very successful, it seems, in... making Baroque opera, which some people think is extremely boring in comparison, but they've been able to make it sexy. They've been able to market it in a way that will draw an audience that normally wouldn't necessarily look that way, simply because it looks sexy and people will go. Young people just want to go somewhere where they're going to feel cool and they're going to be excited to tell their friends what they did and feel slightly elevated by their experience. You know, they want to be enriched, like everyone. And there's just like a 70-year-old, a 20-year-old wants to feel like they're bettering themselves. Mm-hmm. And there are only so many operatic productions that one can turn into a Die Fledermaus that we have produced. And so maybe part of the trick is, like all the risks that our company takes, productions that can appeal to a younger audience might be a good thing in a slightly higher volume, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. 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 But I think, that initial... But the exposure needs to be a little bit more ongoing. I think that's what we're saying to you. I think back to when I didn't have opera growing up at home. But what was it? I think there were some moments in elementary school, I remember these, where like the teacher was playing the LP of like some ballet music or something. And I can remember like just liking that for some reason. Yeah. So if kids don't have that little like minor exposure at some point... That's where we have to be worried about the future audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact is most young people, like most people, do like music. I mean, this is not the issue. You don't have to teach them to like music.
Right.
It won't be opera for most of them. But, I mean, it is all music. It's all made out of the same building blocks. And I think if you just expose them, if they have an opportunity to hear more forms, then they will embrace it. I mean, an opera speaks so directly to people through the music that they will become engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, I think we're all pretty well agreed that just telling people they can wear jeans is not the final answer, but I mean, again, this is one of these discussions that's kind of ongoing and endless, but it's interesting to chat about. I'm not sure about the sort of bar, making them more like public club-like bars. That's what they're also trying. It's kind of cool, but again,
anything that cuts down the lineups. I mean,
I'll drink a pint in my tuxedo. I don't care.
That's great. So for today's Opera Canada segment, Wayne, you're going to speak about the Opera Canada Awards, which I think are more affectionately known as the Rubies, and they were recently held here in Toronto on October 16th. And it's also something you regularly feature in the magazine.
That's right.
In the current issue.
It's an annual program that this year was in its 13th year. This was the 13th installment. And what it is, when we started this, we wanted another way to celebrate outstanding performance or outstanding achievement in opera by Canadians in opera, either in Canada or abroad, or both probably, or on stage and behind the scenes. So it's not just something that is about singers or performers. And I should should perhaps explain first that the official name is the Opera Canada Awards, and as you say, they're called the Rubies, in like the difference between the Academy Awards and the Oscars. I should maybe explain what the Rubies, where the Rubies comes from, and it's really, they're named in honor of Ruby Mercer, who founded Opera Canada magazine in 1960, and about 10 years later founded what is now the Canadian Children's Opera Company, which provides the young singers for COC productions, but also has an extensive program of its own. So the idea was to celebrate outstanding achievement. So let me begin by talking about our honorees this year. There were three of them. Janet Stubbs was a mezzo in the first part of her career. Actually, that's not true. When she trained as a lawyer and actually articled as a lawyer for and worked as a lawyer for about 6 months before she decided that she actually wanted to pursue her singing career. And she did that very successfully with the COC. We're back in the 1970s here, and sang a very good career in North America and here in Toronto particularly. This is in the era of Lotfi Mansouri as general director. And Janet sang for a number of years, and then after she stopped singing, she didn't just retire or become a coach. She actually switched to arts administration. And she was first here at the COC, actually, as in arts administration for a number of years, and then went on after that to the Ontario Arts Foundation, which she headed as executive director, which is a very important public funder for the arts organizations around Ontario. So she had a very long career, first as an artist and then as an administrator. So she kind of exemplifies what I was saying earlier, that the awards sometimes honor not only people who are performers, but people who actually are important behind the scenes. The second honoree was Michael McMahon, okay, collaborative pianist. He's actually on faculty at McGill University still. He's a very active performer still in this respect. He actually is a graduate of McGill and now back there. He's an important coach. He's probably worked with every singer, Canadian singer, in one way or another, of the current generation and the generation before. He's hugely and widely admired for his work as a coach and as an accompanist. And finally, Gerald Finley, who I probably don't need to speak to you about, who's one of the leading Canadian singers on the international opera stage today. He's based in London, has been for a number of years now. He's in New York this fall to do Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, and we managed to get a release from the Metropolitan Opera so he could come up to the awards, and it was literally between rehearsals. He came up for less than a day, actually. But it was wonderful to have him here as well to honor him, because he's had such an outstanding career. And I should say, actually, I don't know, this will interest your listeners here, because when he accepted his award, he actually made an announcement, which was that he is finally, after I think it's two decades, coming back to perform on the stage in an opera with the COC in 2014. He's going to sing the title role of Verdi's Falstaff, which is hugely exciting. And I think it's a role debut for him. So it's a very, very important thing. So, of course, he brought everybody to their feet as soon as he announced that at our evening. So the awards really is to honor them, to our honorees. But we also have performances, and there was a very strong Canadian Opera Company connection this year, insofar as our singers were, two of them were from the current members of the ensemble studio, Rehab Kayeb and Sasha Chihanian. A third singer was a former member of the COC Ensemble Studio and is now going on to San Francisco, and that's Philippe Sly, the bass baritone. And then as an extra this year, we had someone who's not from the ensemble but who was currently singing with the COC, who's Elsa van den Heever. And it was a really very special performance. We have raffle, I should say. This is a fundraiser as well for Opera Canada. So we had a raffle, and a young artist painter in Toronto named Paula Arsenega had donated a painting called September, which had been inspired by Strauss's, from a series inspired by Strauss's Four Last Songs. Oh. And it just happened that Paula and Elsa are friends and had from before, and they cooked up this idea of Elsa performing September at the awards.
Oh, that must have been amazing.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. So it's actually, we try and do this every year as a party. It is a gala, but it's a party. party, and you know, the dress code is elegance. I mean, you dress for the way you want to dress, though if you want to come in jeans and t-shirt, you might feel a little out of place, but you'd be welcome to do that anyway, especially designer jeans. Anyway, we had a full house again this year, and we had Stuart Hamilton, who many of you will remember as the longtime host of Saturday Afternoon at the Opera's quiz program, and was also one of Canada's leading vocal coaches for so many years. Stuart came back, and actually he was the MC for the evening.
Oh,
and he was in great form, because Stuart can be quite irreverent, and he has a long career. And actually, we'd asked him back because just the week before, Stuart had actually published his autobiography, Opening Windows, which is a very interesting read because it covers his career, which is really pretty well the last half of the 20th century. And he got to work with some amazing people like Maureen Forrester. He knew Glenn Gould, roomed with Glenn Gould as a student. So it's a fascinating book. So it was nice to have Stuart back again for that. And I should say we had a sellout yet again, and are very grateful. I should mention that we have a major sponsor for this in BMO Financial Group, which is of course supports so much of opera around. And the event actually was held on BMO premises. It's up on the 68th floor of First Canadian Place here in Toronto. So when you come there, you get a terrific view to start your evening over Toronto and the lake.
I'm curious to know, there must be a panel then who decides who's going to receive the award every year?
Yeah, that's right. We do. We assemble a panel, and we try to... The dream is actually to take the award sometimes outside of Toronto. It's always been held in Toronto. It's a matter of practicalities. But what we do is we assemble a panel of people from the music world and try and choose people from, you know, across the country who are involved in opera in some way. We've done it with general directors. We've done it with coaches, teachers, and so on. And we hold, we do it as an extensive conference call, which may, you know, it's a communication that goes on until they decide on whoever it is for that year.
Well, I mean, it's just such a great thing to honor Canadian people involved in Canadian opera. I mean, we don't really have anything else like that. That just focuses on these outstanding individuals.
It's where we started. I mean, the magazine itself was founded to celebrate the development of opera in Canada. So, but we wanted something special to do this, where we could actually do it in person. I mean, it's not a number of the awardees over the years have been, you know, at the end of their careers or in retirement. I mean, we've had Teresa Stratus, we've had John Vickers, we've had Pierrette Allery, the late Pierrette Allery, and on the stage there. But it's not a lifetime achievement award. We're sort of trying to recognize people who are making a huge contribution now, like Gerald Finley and like Michael McMahon, for example, this year. I mean, they're not at the end of their careers by any means. So, I'm glad we're doing this, and it's a very exciting thing to do. And it's interesting to me, I just read that actually Opera Magazine in London is now about to get involved in a similar program there. Mm-hmm. And Opera News does one in New York. Yeah. But that sort of came after ours as well.
It's a good idea.
It's something that I think needs to be done. I mean, and one of the things we're very concerned to do with Opera Canada, I mean, it's raison d'etre, is to celebrate Canadian achievement, because it's kind of underrated outside sometimes. We have a huge depth of talent in Canada and, you know, active around the world and certainly here in Canada and in the US as well. And so we're really, it's important to us, I think, to celebrate and promote and to find as wide an audience to what they're doing as possible through this.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, the new issue is out, and actually a large feature in the new issue is you can read about our three honorees this year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. It was a great evening.
Good.
I recently chatted with Sandra Gajic, who's the CEO of Edmonton Opera, about their exciting inclusion of two contemporary Canadian operas in their 2012-2013 season. And here's our chat now. Welcome, Sandra. It's great to speak with you. I'm speaking with Sandra Gajic, who is the CEO of Edmonton Opera. It's great to have you with me this morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much, Gianmarco, for giving me an opportunity to speak about what we are doing here in Edmonton.
Well, What we're speaking about specifically today is something very exciting, I think. It's so rare for a larger opera company to incorporate contemporary works into their season, and you're doing just that. And I'm just wondering what brought about this bold decision.
The whole decision to change the business model, basically, what we are doing is to not only produce, in our case, three main stage operas this season at the large theater, but we also wanted, A, expand our civic footprint in the community, and B, really bring some of the great either new Canadian work, either the first time premiering it, or give a Canadian work a chance to be seen and heard again.
Exactly.
Because often wonderful works are performed only once, produced only once, and it's very rare, unfortunately, to be able to see them and hear them again. So that's what we see our responsibility as a regional opera company, to give our audiences a chance to really experience great new work created by Canadian talent here in our city.
Well, this is a very exciting endeavor, and I'll just update our listeners as to the works we're speaking of. The first one you'll be presenting, and that's quite soon, in November, from the 15th to the 18th, and this is a new opera, Shelter, by Juliet Keery Palmer, who's the composer, and the librettist is Julie Salverson. Can you tell me a bit more about this work in terms of, well, not just the plot, but what is the sort of sound world that's people are going to be hearing in this piece?
It's a Shelter that will have a world premiere here in Edmonton. It's actually produced and co-produced or co-presented with us and the Tapestry, New Works.
Right.
New opera from Toronto. And it's been developed over the last 10 years or so. So it's really had a long, long time in creation. And I've seen it at different stages. I've heard it at different stages. It's the story behind it, the story behind the sound part is really a story that's not that well known. The uranium mine in the Northwest Territories, where the native people, Dene, were the ones doing the work without any protection over the years, so which led over the years to decimation of the population. The most men that worked in the mines are gone. Mm. So there have been lots of documentaries, Village of Widows, there have been a Highway of the Atom, because the uranium traveled down to Edmonton in burlap sacks, and then was, even as recently as 30, 40 years ago, loaded on canoes and then went on rail by a rail to Port Hope. So the background is a very powerful environmental, political story, as our uranium also played part in the bomb that ended the Second World War.
Yes.
So it's a very big, it's a big story, powerful story.
Yeah.
And we really did it. We are doing it in partnership also with the University of Alberta. There is a Festival of Ideas running at the same time. So we are bringing some atomic physicists, we are bringing a visual art exhibit called Atomicalia, which is 72 visual art objects showing some of the art from the, or commercially, the design of industrial design from the 50s, when atom was the coolest thing in the world.
Right.
So that's kind of a part. We will have panel discussions. One of them will be more about the atomic energy. Then there will be more where we are bringing some Dene people down here to Edmonton, so that we also want to show what it really means from the perspective of the Dene, so they will have a chance to hear the opera and see it also and experience it.
Well, I've noticed on your website you've already listed some of these events, so people can check them out there and get all the details. It's really wonderful.
Yeah.
What I find interesting, too, is that you're taking this opera, Shelter, and the other one we'll speak about in a second, to different venues. You're putting them on in, not in your regular Jubilee Auditorium.
Correct. The first one, Edmonton's a city that has a very lively arts and cultural scene.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for us to find venues.
Oh.
smaller venues.
Right.
Jubilee is 2,400 seats.
Yeah, it's a big place, yeah.
we wish we had a smaller house, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So when we started planning, and we only started planning just over a year ago, ATB Canadian Series, as we are calling it, the finding the alternate venues became a major, major problem.
Mm.
We are performing the Shelter, the small black box theater at the Cité Francophone, under 200 seats, 190 seats. So it's going to be a very intimate, wonderful setting for people really to be close to the performers and experience it really in a very, very, as I said, intimate setting.
Well, you know, a lot of opera companies are now experimenting with these smaller opera companies in these smaller venues, and it is a really different experience when you're that close to the performers. It can be very exciting.
Yes, we believe so, and it's going to be, I think, something that people will speak about and experience opera in a way that we believe will also break some of the barriers and bring them to other operatic event and experience in different venues. Or, you know, not everybody will want to see opera on the and, you know, one of the grand operas.
Exactly.
Like the season, but that's fine.
Well, what I'd like to do now is just speak a little bit more about the second contemporary Canadian work that's programmed into your season, and this is Svadba Wedding. And I mean, some people in Toronto will have already seen this because Queen of Pudding's Music Theatre obviously had a big success with it last season. And even here at the COC, it was part of one of our lunchtime concerts, so people might have seen that. And it's now getting a second lease on life. I know it's going on tour within Canada and also in Europe. And so you're obviously part of this somehow. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
We are actually very proud here at Edmonton Opera that we actually kick-started all of these tours. Because when we approached the Queen of Pudding to see whether we could afford and how we could make it possible to bring Svadba to Edmonton, we supported the Canada Council tour grant. And so Edmonton is one of the three cities in Western Canada, but only city where it's going to be fully staged.
Right.
In a 700-seat theater, while they are taking the concert version to Vancouver and Calgary.
I see.
And then in the last few months, Queen of Puddings managed to also get support and have a European tour, which is, they are right now, they are performing in Europe. They are doing Dublin, Paris, Orléans, and Belgrade. So it's really, really exciting to be part of that. And we have a local singer here and a vocal teacher at the opera school here in Edmonton, Elizabeth Turnbull, that's in the cast. She replaced Christina Sabo from the original cast. The rest is all original cast that Toronto audiences have seen and heard.
Well, wonderful. It's so great to know that, again, like you were saying at the beginning of the interview, that these, you know, to give a new lease on life to pieces often get performed once or twice and are never heard of again. So it's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Absolutely. It is important. And you know, for us, the stage of our development, even though we are a 49-year-old company, still we don't have the capacities to or time at this stage to start developing and commissioning new work. Maybe one day, but you know, we also have great friends in Calgary that do a phenomenal job commissioning and doing it. So we really, as I said, for now we are happy being partners, collaborating, and also presenting the new work.
Well, it sounds like a great plan. And I'll just mention that the Svadba wedding opera is going to be appearing in January 2013, from the 12th to the 19th of January.
Yes.
That would be something to look forward to after Christmas.
Certainly.
Well, I really appreciate you talking with me today, Sandra. It's great to reconnect. We'll be following all this closely and with great interest.
We look forward to future conversations.
Most certainly.
And thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you, Claire and Wayne and Cameron, for joining me today. Signing off now, Gianmarco Segato. Just want to mention that these podcasts are generally sponsored by DECA, the opera label. And if you have any comments or questions, you can, gosh, there's all sorts of ways. We tweet the new podcast. You can respond there. It goes on Facebook when there's a new one. So another way to contact us. Also on Parlando, our COC blog, we put up a blog post each time there's a new one, and you can comment there as well. So we would really like to hear from you, your suggestions and your ideas and your opinions. Thank you.